Yes, very good afternoon to you. Welcome. I'm John Moss. Rather sooner than we might have anticipated, Timbald has to restock its LegCo cabinet. The reason, two LegCo members, something over halfway through their term of office, decided their political lights might burn a bit brighter in the House of Keys, leaving the deep, deep peace of Legislative Council for the hurly-burly of Keys. Oh, is that the way people would see it? Indeed, both members have now been given ministerial briefs. When Jane Paul Wilson and Kate Lord Brennan won their LegCo seats, they were in a tranche of five female members, completely altering the look of council. Now they've departed, their successors may be found amongst the seven candidates in front of me here in the studio. Well, they need a majority of the votes of members present on Tuesday, first of all, that small hurdle to overcome. The seven are with us. On a screen, because he can't be in the studio, is Bill Shimmins, and we bid him a good afternoon. He'll be with us for the full hour, hopefully. Also with us is Paul Crane, Corelli Bentham, Dan Kelsey, Craig Brown, Mary Beth Cole, and Connor Keenan. Just a reminder that a person here has to be not less than 21 years of age to be qualified as an elected member, must at the time of the election be resident within the island and not be a person in receipt of a salary payable by either United Kingdom government or the Isle of Man government. We were having a bit of discussion about this before the programme started as to the timing. If you are a member and receiving a salary from the Isle of Man government, when you stop receiving that salary. We might talk about that, but just tell you who the current membership are. Lawrence Skerry, the president, voted president only recently. Peter Eagles, the bishop. John Quinn, attorney general. Marlene Masker, Tanya August Hansen, Peter Greenhill, Bill Henderson, Rob Mercer and Kerry Sharp. In years past, of course, the original function of LegCo was executive, giving advice to the Lieutenant Governor or the Lords of Man. The makeup then was rather different. The Lieutenant Governor, the Bishop, the First and Second Deemster, Clerk of the Rolls, the Attorney General, Receiver General, the Water Bailiff, that was a position that was dissolved in 1885, the Archdeacon of Sodor and Man, and the Vicar General of Sodor and Man. That was the makeup at the time. It's rather different now. We have eight members who were elected by the House of Keys. Two seats are vacant, and that's what the election on Tuesday, the 23rd, in the House of Keys will be all about. Now, what I want to do is to invite the members in order of nomination to have a chat with us and tell us why they think two things. First of all, why they are the person to fill that vacant seat. And also, the role of LegCo, what they see it as, why LegCo actually exists. And we'll go, first of all, crossing fingers to Bill Shimmins, who joins us on the programme. Good afternoon, Mr. Shimmins.
Good afternoon, John.
Welcome to from across the water. A lovely sunny day here. I presume the sun's shining in Liverpool as well. Let's hope it is. But can I ask you, first of all, those two questions? First of all, why do you think you are the man for the job? And what do you think LegCo's office, what do you think it should be doing?
Yeah, so why I think I'm a man for a job is I have previous experience in Timbald, so I can hit the ground running from day one. I'm very comfortable asking questions. I did that for 5 years as an active MHK. I served on committees. I moved lots of amendments. I've taken various bills through the House of Keys, so I have an in-depth understanding of the parliamentary process, which actually are relatively complicated. I also have helpful previous experience across banking, both in international and local business across all sectors, except for 5 years on the Treasury Board and latterly on the Economic Recovery Group. So I really understand what makes the Manx economy tick. So I think that enables me to bring a lot of experience to the role, and I think that will be helpful. It was very difficult for me not to stand in September, a really difficult decision for Keys. Unfortunately, my family were struggling for a number of serious health challenges, and I simply couldn't commit to a five-year term. But I can commit to this term, which is for 15 months. And I believe that if I was elected, I'd make a significant contribution over the next 15 months. And I think that my experience and also my approach and energy will bring considerable value, not just in scrutiny, turning to the second part of your question about what the role entails. Yes, clearly there's scrutiny, and I'm lots of experience in that. I'm very comfortable with scrutiny and the technical aspects of the role, but I also think there needs to be a focus on delivery, and I think MLCs can provide that. And I think that's what really matters to people. People are less focused on the detail in terms of the bills and the policies and the strategies, which clearly are important. Actually, it's delivery that really matters. So I hope to bring that focus if I'm elected for the next 15 months.
Mr. Shimmins, thank you. Can I just put a couple of quotes from Daphne Kane, who nominated you? I believe he would be able to hit the ground running for the 15-month term remaining. She cites your banking and keys experiencing, enabling you to demonstrate a high level of legislative scrutiny, provide valuable input into new legislation. You've been seconded by Mrs. Claire Christian. But can I put a rather harsh point to you that people might suggest that you saw the political rise and thought you wouldn't get re-elected in the middle? Yeah, we'll pause a bit and we'll have a go for LegCo. Is that fair?
I think that's quite unfair, actually, John. I can understand why people might think that. In terms of the outcome of the middle election, it's almost an irrelevant question for me because I simply wasn't able to stand because I had other commitments. So a number of members after the election said your experience would be helpful. Would you be interested in standing as MLC? So it certainly was never my plan in actual fact in terms of an approach. So and I hope if I am elected that I would be able to help the next administration over the next 15 months, because actually in many ways, John, the first 3 to 6 months of an administration are the most critical, and lots of important decisions are going to be made now. So that's why I think my experience will be helpful, particularly for the 15-month term, because I'm not able to serve for 5 years.
Mr. Shimmins, thank you very much. Please stay with us. We're going to our next nominated candidate, Paul Crane, nominated by Chris Thomas, who describes Mr. Crane as analytical and someone who looks for two pieces of evidence in any matter from two sources. Stood in the general election in 2011-2016, got 560 votes in 2011, over 1,000 votes in 2016. I think it was 27% of the vote actually went to yourself, and is probably best known for his Population Atlas of the Isle of Man, which contains an awful lot of detail, which is scrutinised by an awful lot of people. Can I ask you now to give your view of why you're the man for the job and what the job entails?
I'm Paul Crane, born on the Isle of Man, married to Anne for more than 40 years. I'd like to start with the second part of the question you asked first, picking out three things from the job description for members of the Legislative Council. One of the items is that the MLC members are to provide a distinct and influential voice of the political life on the island based on an understanding and an experience of island life. I'll come back to that in a minute. A second point I'd pick out is the scrutiny dimension to it, scrutiny of all elements of the work of Timwald as well as legislation. And then it refers in the job description to the MLCs being a resource for the publicly elected members of the Keys. I want to pick up on three of those areas. Firstly, the issue of knowing the Isle of Man. I know the Isle of Man. I know it through experience. I've lived here through austerity and I've lived here through boom. In recent decades, as you've mentioned, I've thoroughly researched the population of the Isle of Man, producing the Population Atlas. I know the Isle of Man. Secondly, I do data. I do detail. I get called a statistician, but my passion is not for statistics. I would say, perhaps in response to Bill's comments about it's not so much detail as implementing it, I know from years of experience how easy it is for the data to be completely bypassed by government decision making. So the detail and the evidence is crucial. Thirdly, I've been trained in and practiced scrutiny in educational contexts. I'm prepared to speak out, but I'm not outspoken. I believe I could be a very significant resource for the House of Keys and a distinctive voice in the Legislative Council and in Timwald.
Can I just ask you, you're a member of the Climate Reality Leadership Corps?
Yes, that's right.
Well, what is that?
It's 40,000 people who've been through the Climate Reality Programme training. So that's a three-day training programme led by Al Gore.
It's to do with the environment, is it?
Sorry?
To do with the environment?
To do with climate change. Right. Absolutely on the nail. So in terms of getting on the training, you have to submit applications and details. You get thoroughly vetted and so on. We were staying with friends in Minneapolis and I'd seen this opportunity coming up. So I'd applied and had to wait a couple of weeks to get my application accepted. And then I attended 3 days training led by Al Gore, leading most sessions on the stage, 1,100 people present. And then in return for that, you have to commit to give presentations on climate change change, and you get access to all of the resources of the Climate Reality Project, and you get daily updates and so on related to this.
Will that have an influence on decisions you might take in LegCo?
In the sense that climate change will have an influence on that, yes, but everything that you get from a single source on climate change, you filter as you would with anything. So I taught climate change as an A-level teacher back in the 90s through the period of the Rio Summit and so on. I would never take anything from a single source. I've read very widely on this.
Well, let's move on to Mrs. Corelli Bentham. Welcome to the gathering, Mrs. Bentham. Nominated by Alex Allenson, who told me that she is independent of thought and has the ability to question. She's a chartered quantity surveyor. We'll talk a bit more about your background, but first of all, those two questions again. Why are you the person for this job, and what the job is?
Well, thanks, John. Well, I've worked in construction for the last, 30 years. My whole career in construction and education has had a focus on quality assurance, upskilling and improving standards. My job choices have always been to make a difference. This is where definitely my passion lies. I've worked on both sides of the construction fence, for the client, for the contractor, for the public and private sector, preempting your question there, John, in the Isle of Man, UK, China and Hong Kong. I think I am a straight-talking person. I'm at home with facts, figures and detail, although I do like to be prepared. But I'm objective and fair, and this has served me well in carrying out the role in my careers. The MLC role, I believe, is a warts and all approach and needs a person that creates an environment of open and honest discussion. I'm a people person, and I've constantly demonstrated success in forming collaborative, trusting teams. So I think my non-conflict, I'd say empathetic approach would serve the MLC team well, really.
Well, nominated by Dr. Alex Allenson, seconded by Dr. Michelle Hayward. Did they approach you, or were you thinking in this direction?
No, I approached them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was...
Excuse me, knock, knock, excuse me, Dr. Allenson, I'd like to be an MLC.
I went to Tim Crookall first because I'd had a working relationship with Tim as Minister of Education, and he had said, go to your local MHK, so I knocked on Mr. Allenson's
door. Suited to be an MHK rather than an MLC.
No, I'm not. I think it's a completely different role. This is, I am one to look at legislation rather than propose it. I want to be the checker and to make sure that the legislation that's put forward is what the MHKs, the outcome is what the MHKs want.
We're going to deal with that question later on as well. Thank you very much, you. Mrs. Bentham. Can we move on to Diane Kelsey, Private Secretary to the Lieutenant Governor, joining us now. Just a point we were discussing before. Obviously, you draw a salary from, is it the UK government or from the Isle of Man government?
From the Isle of Man government.
And that would, an election, if you were elected, that would stop?
It stops immediately.
Immediately, and that's part of the rules of being nominated. Well, can I ask you, first of all, why do you think you're the person for the job, what the job is?
Oh, thanks, John. Well, I've got a strong sense of public duty. I've been involved in a lot of public committees in the past on the Isle of Man, and obviously service with the Royal Air Force for 23 years. I've got a scrutiny and decision-making background, and I'm a team player who's passionate about the Isle of Man. In particular, the last 4 years working with the Lieutenant Governor, I think I've honed most of the skills that are necessary to be immediately useful to colleagues on LegCo and obviously colleagues in the Keys. And actually, the reason for applying now is that I want to have a direct influence and actually take some personal responsibility to ensure that all future Manx law is the best we can possibly get and it's understandable by everyone it affects. So I work tirelessly to achieve this. So onto the role of a MLC, I've touched on it already. It's very much, in my view, it's about working with the Keys and the other members of LegCo. There's another, if we two of us get elected, there's another nine people on LegCo, and we shouldn't forget about them. Working with them to get good Manx laws. And that might mean just sitting and doing an awful lot of hard work of reading and understanding and challenging or asking questions, but not also holding things up. So that's why I think I'd be good at the job.
Your resume I read up on the internet is very highly motivated, experienced, successful leader of challenge, trusted and proven leader of technical and multidisciplinary teams. You've been here for 10 years, haven't you?
I have, yes. Back on the island. I grew up here.
Let's move on to our next candidate, sitting just behind you there at our table. Craig Brown, nominated by David Ashford. 13 years on the island, I think you've been here, is that?
That's 13, correct, John.
13 years, seconded by Laurie Hooper. Worked inside the finance sector. Tell us, what are your thoughts on your own qualities and the qualities of the LegCo?
Thank you, John. Pastor Mai. And I'm pleased that you didn't say, why am I the best person? Because I think I'd have to qualify that and say that I wouldn't necessarily be the best person. I think I'm one of many people here, certainly one of seven, that would be very capable of doing this job. And something that the past few weeks have taught me is that we have some very capable people around the table today. I'm not very good at blowing my own trumpet, but you've asked me the question. So why would I be good at the role? Well, I've got a business career that I think has been very successful, not just financially, not just in the results that have been achieved there, but in the way in which that's been done, the application of that. I have good intellect, but I, as an engineer, have the ability to apply that in context, to work with people collegiately. And looking at the recent island plan, the draft island plan that's been put out there, I'm massively encouraged to see the people first element of that, because to me, people have been at the heart of everything that I've done. A successful business, a successful economy, a successful country is only as good as the people that are in there. And that's something that is very close to my heart and something that I would bring to LegCo if I were in there. So that's why I think I would be a good person for the role.
You mentioned working collegiately, but isn't that a danger of groupthink? You don't want to ruffle too many feathers, so you tend to agree with everybody.
I think there's a misunderstanding of collegiate thinking. Collegiate thinking isn't everybody thinking the same thing. It's thinking towards a common aim and a common end. And you have to have challenge in good debates. You have to have people that are willing to put their opinions forward. But ultimately, you need to reach consensus at the end of the day. That doesn't mean agreement, but it does mean consensus.
Craig Brown, thank you. We'll be opening up the discussion later. But first of all, let me go to Mary Beth Cole. Many people will know her name in connection with Foraging Vintners, of course, co-founder of Foraging Vintners, nominated by Mrs. Michelle Haywood, of course, is an MHK down that neck of the woods, down the south of the island, and seconded by Laurie Hooper. Again, the question, why? Why should you be there in LegCo? And what's LegCo all about?
For me, my background is in law and government starts with my undergraduate study in political science at the University of Houston. And I was also working in investment banking in the energy sector at the same time. And this led me to further pursue my law interest at the University of Queensland in Australia. I'm on the roll of solicitors in Australia, and then I'm also admitted to the bar in New York and Colorado. And my main legal work was involved in property, natural resources, and environmental law. All of these areas are highly regulated by state and federal authorities, so I have real good engagement with the government, something I've always done. So when I opened a business, startup business here, it quickly put me in touch with all the government departments here, and I was able to get an understanding of how their processes work in each of the departments, and find the efficiencies and weaknesses. But also having a small business, I have a boots-on-the-ground view of how the local economy is functioning and the critical impact government policy and law has on it. So for me, I feel I'm qualified, I have a proven track record, and I'm highly committed and invested in this island. And most importantly, I'm ready, willing, and able to start helping.
You used the word, when you were putting up the business, we navigated through most of the government departments. Has a slight tinge of criticism there? Do you think there's too much navigation required?
I think for certain processes that need to happen, they don't have to be so hard. And I think there's
planning, that sort of thing.
I've gone through
planning. That's a yes, isn't it?
Yeah. I've gone through planning more than my fair share. Just even this past summer, we had to go through it again. So for the Cozy Nook. So there is lots of hurdles, but they're all you can jump them all. But they put up maybe one or two too many.
One of your outlets is right next to a fairly contentious place, isn't it? The Cozy Nook Cafe.
That is.
So you've got a close view of that. Now let's go to our final of the seven candidates, who we want to hear from 2 minutes, basically. Connor Keenan, who's a teacher, PE teacher at Ramsey Grammar School, nominated by Jason Morehouse, seconded by Rob Callister. Mr. Morehouse, when I asked him, he said, He has the skills to be a valuable asset. He's able to offer a unique and different perspective. That makes him an attractive candidate coming from a different perspective. He also went on the possibility that Connor will be able to contribute to a younger perspective to Timbal debates will be beneficial. In fact, Mr. Morehouse says he, in the spring, he moved a motion relating to creating an environment, creating a more attractive island for young people, and he hopes that Mr. Keenan would be able to battle on that side. Can I ask the two questions that have been hanging in the air for the last half hour, Connor Keenan? First of all, why are you the person for the job?
Thank you, John. So obviously I'm a teacher, I'm a school governor, and I'm currently the president of the National Education Union as well. All aspects of those have led me to have to develop the skill of scrutiny, which is clearly the primary focus of Legislative Council. As you've touched upon there in those very kind words, I do feel like I represent a diverse element. I believe there's a gap for my skill set on Legislative Council. Similar to Mary Beth, I work in a heavily regulated and legislated environment where legislation quite often works from a legal framework, but in practical terms, there are massive limitations to it. So I feel I represent that practical element also. In terms of the roles of LegCo, for me, they're fourfold. Clearly, everybody's highlighted the role of scrutiny, which is its primary focus. The second aspect for me is that active engagement in Timbald. We are potentially, two of us are going to be potentially indirectly elected by members of the House of Keys. With that comes a certain political responsibility as well, because we have to be an active contributor. We have to be able to do something as regards to the whole Timbald debate as well. So I think that's the second element of it. For me, the third aspect of the role is clearly the potential to be on a select committee as and when they're drawn up. For me, that provides a certain element of a mechanism of scrutiny on the job as well. Again, linking into the main focus of the role as a scrutineer. And then clearly the fourth aspect of me is the potential to be a member of the Public Accounts Committee as well, which is obviously dependent on the makeup of the Policy Review Committees. I think Mr. Mercer at the moment has found his way onto the PAC. So for me, the role is fourfold.
Connor Keenan, I'm glad I'm sitting quite a way away from you because you're a well-built fellow and you might take offence at this question. Are you not just bored to death with teaching and want something else?
Not at all, no. As I say, I was actually relatively late to start teaching as well. So initially when I moved back to the island, I was very keen to move back. And I started working for Barclays in Douglas. I very quickly found that perhaps wasn't the environment for me, the banking industry, but it was something I was in for a couple of years. Teaching, particularly the PE route, I've grown up with sport, and that's always been one of my passions. So that was an aspect that I've gone into, and it's certainly not that I'm bored of it, but there are, as I would suggest with everyone here, there are frustrations with the
but
job.
We need teachers. We're short of teachers.
We certainly do need teachers, but we need teachers that can work in a regulatory and legislative framework that works for both teachers, parents, students, department as well. I mean, our current Education Act dates from 2001. I know that was a hot topic of conversation over the last couple of years until it got
dumped,
for want of a better word. Yes, there is a need for teachers, but we need to create an environment which works as well, as I say, for teachers, students, parents, everybody. And unfortunately, at the moment, our Education Act in particular doesn't necessarily facilitate that.
Connor Keenan, thank you very much. We're going to take a break.
Join us for festive lunch and dinner throughout December. Perfect for the family, the work do, the catch-up with friends and the weekend getaway. See menus and book at manninhotel.in.
Christmas at the Manin Hotel.
At Lifestyle Furniture, we know a few things about furniture. We know that not everyone likes the same styles or designs, so we stock the most amazing eclectic range of furnishings for every room in the house. We also know that our customers like interest-free credit, free delivery and free fitting. So why not pop into our two-storey showroom open 7 days a week? Lifestyle Furniture. It's everything your home's been waiting for. See our website for details. Credit subject to status.
Come to ShopRite now and enjoy that ready for Christmas feeling, no matter what. Why risk disappointment later? Now's the time to shop our best ever festive food and drink choice. with great offers and big savings across the store. And thanks to our on-island warehousing, we've plenty on the shelves. Get that ready for Christmas feeling. Buy now and be sure you have it at your nearest ShopRite. Proudly locally owned.
Just Care Products for mobility solutions.
Visit Just Care Products right behind B&Q and see our wide range of mobility aids, from small everyday items to rise recline chairs, beds, scooters and our airline-friendly foldable power chair. Plus, we are the island's only stockists of cozy feet footwear. Just Care Products, right behind B&Q.
Just Care Products, 6 to 7, 1 double 7.
Good afternoon, I'm John Moss. What we're doing this afternoon for an hour is talking to the 7 candidates who are standing, 2 of them to be Legislative Council members for 15 months after 2 of the members left and became MHKs. Now, Bill Shimmins has been sitting very patiently over there in Liverpool because he's not been with us today. Good afternoon, Mr. Shimmins. Can I put this question to you? Anne Corlett, I believe it was, suggested that LegCo should be cut from 8 to 6 members, quote, to save money, amongst other things. Is 8 too many?
I think that's a good challenge, and I've discussed that with Anne in the last year or so. I think you need to look at the whole balance. So potentially you could go from 8 to 6, but then I think you'd probably have to reduce the number of ministers because actually Timbald is quite finely balanced. So we need to bear in mind that really there's a lot to be done, and certainly from my perspective, saving 2 MLCs salary and then potentially perhaps reducing correspondingly the balance in keys. Anything's possible. But actually, I think you could be just a bit penny wise, if you like. And in terms of, I think I would represent excellent value for money. Because I'm able to start from day one. I also know how government works.
It's good news, work. Mr. Shimmins. Thank you. Right. So basically, you think that 8 is a good number. Do you think it should be expanded more than 8?
No, I wouldn't expand it. What I'm saying is actually you could reduce it to 6, but I think if you did do that, you'd need to be very careful about the balance in Timbald. You can do anything, but you need to be wary of upsetting that balance. So go down to 6. But if you did that, I think you would need to shave some of the numbers in terms of the voting in Timbald from the keys, particularly in the council ministers.
Thank you very much. I'll go to Paul Crane now, because you were in Timbald watching last week. 6 or 8? What do you think?
Well, of course, in Timbald last week, there were only 6 members of the Legislative Council.
Mr. Greenhill was on a screen.
He was on a screen, OK, yes. We had 2 missing because they were now in the keys. So that's the point I was making. I think it's one of a range of decisions that's been on the table over the last few years, really. The whole notion of, do we need to keep a legislative council? Should it be popularly elected? Should it be the size it is? And so on. We had Lord Lisvain's report on this back in 2016. He certainly puts a strong case for saying why we should keep the Legislative Council. He puts a strong case for saying that it's useful to have that checks and balances that go on legislation, especially when it's been considered in one place and then the same legislation.
So you're saying it should stay at 8, you think?
I think that it's one of a range of views. I think it's actually a policy decision at the end of it should be made by the Keys. That's the right and proper party to do it. You know, the policy-making body in the island is the Keys. I think asking legislation of council how many there should be on Legislative Council is back to
Christmas.
The turkeys for Christmas.
Would you, Lord Lisvain's report, did you throw your hat in the air? Good report?
I thought it was a good report in many respects, yes. I know some of the things from it have been picked up and used, and some of the things from it have been turned down and gone beyond the nominations committee idea, for example, for Legislative Council members. But it was great when they introduced the programme for government, although that didn't go so well, I feel, in the first 5 years. Now we've got the our island plan coming through. I think that's really good. So I was behind most of what Lisvain said.
Can I just go, I'll change the order slightly. Mary Beth Cole, looking, have you witnessed LegCo meetings? Have you sat in and watched them? And if you have, what are your thoughts?
Well, I went to the Tynwald Court on Tuesday, and it was interesting.
That's damned with faint praise.
No. You can tell that it's steeped in the Court of Chancery, this Court of Equity, where the church was involved in the ceremony, and where it's quite formal. And
this is in Houston and Cleveland, is it? Is this what you're talking about? The Court of Equity?
Oh, no, the Court of Chancery. So within a common law system, you had the Court of Chancery, which was directed by the church, and that kind of tempered the harshness of the law.
Right.
But so when you watch Tynwald, you can tell that there is sort of this religious sort of element where they're there for a purpose greater than themselves.
Is that because the bishop is sitting amongst them?
I think probably. Well,
it's an interesting point. I've not heard that. He actually has an influence on that aspect of it.
Especially when they do a prayer together. They all put their intention joined together to sort of take note of the gravity of what they're getting ready to do. So I found that to be very, really impressive.
That's interesting. Craig Brown, the numbers. Legco.
Well, the engineer in me tells me that you don't fix something that isn't broken, albeit that, of course, you do always look to improve on things. And it does worry me when I hear something coming down purely to a numbers question. And, of course, you could do the job with six people rather than eight. And, of course, that's six elected, because there are three ex officio members of Legco anyway. But rather than looking at the pure numbers, I think you have to look at the effectiveness there. And, yes, I would much rather have a Legco of six if they were highly effective and did twice the work. But if you look at the volume of legislation that will be going through, if you look at what will need to be done over the years ahead, I don't think you could possibly do that with fewer members than there are at present.
Well, we've just heard mention from Mary Beth about the bishop's influence in various regards in this. What about the bishop's position, unelected?
I have
just
no
making up the numbers. What?
Not in the slightest. I mean, Lord Lisvain did touch on the bishop's position, and there's been a lot of debate around that. And I think there were some very good arguments made for the bishop retaining his position there.
Can we squeeze a yes or a no out of you?
I believe that the bishop should be on Legco. Yes.
Good. Let's just go back to Corelli Bentham as well. You were listening to what Paul Crane was having to say. Numbers, the numbers game on Legco.
Oh, I'm a quantity surveyor, so I do like numbers, to be fair. So I think, obviously, it is Turkey's voting for Christmas. So until you're in that position, we won't know what the workload's like. But if you look currently, there's 13 committees, 63 members across all of the administration run those committees. In terms of, if you compare the Isle of Man with the Channel Islands, we've got a much smaller administration in comparison.
I think they have 53.
They do.
Overall.
Yeah. So, so just looking at the numbers, I think, well, you know, it's right, really. And if you start taking people away, the job is to scrutineer, to make sure things are done right. So you reduce the number, that has to have an effect.
Can I ask you down, Kelsey, your thoughts on this?
I think it should stay at eight elected members by the Keys, so they're the democratically elected members, and they will then choose who they think should be on the Legco. And the reason for saying eight is that I think you've got to have some diversity. And I think the smaller numbers you have, the less chance there is for diversity. So I would stick at eight.
Connie?
Yes, I think Mr. Shimmons touched upon it actually. As I understand it, our parliamentary system was set up by Lord Macdonald in 1919, and I think the numbers element is crucial to it. So with the numbers that are there at present, clearly that with it in connection with backbench MHKs prevents council ministers almost effectively riding roughshod over Tynwald. So any implementation of reducing that number would obviously have to be reduced elsewhere to prevent that kind of effect happening. In terms of what numerous other people have said from a diversity point of view, clearly the more people you've got there, the increased range of scope you've got for people from different backgrounds, different views, representing lots of different elements.
Can I just ask you, do you think council of ministers do on occasion ride roughshod, your own word, over Tynwald?
No, because there's a mechanism in place to stop it.
Right.
As I say, that's the logistics of it with the numbers that are on council. So it's naturally prevented from happening, if that makes sense.
Can I stay with you with the next question? Should Legco originate legislation, or should they, as they were referred to quite often, as they are referred to, be a revising body and purely wait from what comes through from the House of Keys and add their expertise and wisdom to that?
I think that would be the ideal scenario, because ultimately people on Legislative Council don't have a necessarily a political mandate. Clearly the MHKs have got the political mandate. From my understanding, the most recent piece of legislation which originated in LegCo was obviously the Equalities Bill, and I believe that came about just because of the order of the change in the House of Keys at the time. With the ending of one house and the start of a new house, it didn't lend itself. So I believe that the continuous membership of LegCo allowed that to happen. I think it's important that is the way it should be. Is it the ultimate focus of LegCo, as everyone's touched upon, is that scrutiny element. But within the framework of Timwald, they still have scope to add and contribute to the decisions. Ultimately, policy must remain at the behest of departments and ultimately ministers.
Just ask Paul Crane. Legislation, should it originate? I think LegCo members can actually put motions forward now.
I think it's possible, and you can certainly have private members' bills that might begin in Legislative Council. I would go along with the broad idea that Legislative Council must not attempt to overtake the policy-making role that the directly elected members
are. So it has to accept a subordinate role?
It accepts its correct role. I wouldn't say subordinate role, because when you're scrutinising the legislation and the policies that are being put forward from the Keys or within Timwald, then obviously you've got almost a higher level role at that point, because you're coming in and challenging and trying to be robust with a view of improving, not a view of damaging. But I think the Legislative Council, it does have a subordinate role in general terms. You know, it is there to support, it is there as a resource, it is there to scrutinise, and it is not there to attempt to compete with the Keys for the policy making going forward.
You're nodding your head there, Corelli Benton.
I completely agree, yeah, absolutely. MLCs aren't voted in by the public. They're voted in by the MHK, so we shouldn't be...
So should there be a better definition of the role of LegCo in law, so that they say we cannot stray beyond that? Paul Crane, you've got your hand up there.
Yeah, there is a job description. So, you know, it's there. We've all seen that. It has 9 key points to it. And it's very clear about what the role is, you know, and I think it wouldn't be appropriate to attempt to deviate from that, really. So the role is clear.
Can I just go? Oh, yes, sorry. This is Conor Keenan.
Thank you, John. Just to add, I think I would class ourselves in this room as politically engaged. And I think one thing which has been highlighted to me as regards to this process is that there's a large element of the public are not politically engaged and not aware of what the actual role of LegCo is. I think the role of LegCo within Timwald, within people who are au fait with local politics, is set. Certainly for me, when lots of my colleagues and friends and family became aware that I'd been nominated, they thought I was going to be having tea with the Chief Minister every day and speaking to Boris Johnson. So I think there's a wider issue around education of what the actual role of LegCo is, what its purpose is.
Speaking to the Chief Minister and having tea with Boris Johnson is probably the way around. So they didn't know what the purpose was.
I think there's, not that they don't know, it's, I think there's confusion. I think that's certainly something that Timwald as a body could do better is to educate, because as I say, there's certainly my experience of this process has definitely highlighted that to me, that there's people thought you were going to come in and almost revolutionise what you were going to do, and had to say, well, that's not actually the position. It's very distinctly different, as has been touched upon before, that the difference between the MLC and MHK roles are really, really different. For me, I know it's a very simplistic example, but it's almost a difference between a cashier in a bank and somebody who works in the back office. They both work for the bank, but the roles within it are very, very distinct and very, very different.
It was suggested to me that quite a few of you, I mean, 5 was the number put, would be better off going for the House of Keys and question why, in fact, they were going for the Legislative Council. And also a point, and this was quite interesting, that Keys members who nominate and second you could actually find this rebounding on them, because a couple of LegCo members who've gone in there, proved their worth, come back and taken a couple of seats away from people who might have got in the general election. So the Keys might think twice about this. But why did you go for LegCo, if I can go around the table here, and not perhaps go for House of Keys?
That's me again, sorry.
Let's go for Mary Beth, because she's next.
So I'm more drawn to the Legislative Council position rather than the House of Keys, simply because of my legal background, of how I can understand how I can influence sort of the final delivery.
Did you consider the Keys?
I considered it, but I have an accent. I don't know if you can hear it. And I'm just not confident that that's going to work within a constituency. I think for me, from my point of view, it was going to be...
So you think you'd be voted against by people who heard your accent and thought you're not appropriate for the House of Keys?
I'm not suggesting that the constituents are that type of people, but I do know it's a hurdle. I know that people listen to me. They're listening to my accents and sometimes not my words. And so from my point of view, I think it's really important for me to have a role where it's more reviewing and revising where it, within legislation and giving advice to individuals.
I know Bill Shimmons is jumping up and down and Liverpool wanted to come in on this. Mr. Shimmons.
Hi, John. In terms of, I think I've explained why I didn't stand an MHK. In terms of the differences in the role, absolutely the MLC role is clearly about scrutiny, revision as well. But I think there is a danger that people think that the Legislative Council should be very deferential. Absolutely, I think there needs to be respectful challenge, but not constantly deferring. And actually, there's some really good examples in the last 2 years where Legislative Council amended some pretty poorly thought out legislation that was coming through. And there was some quite tense and robust discussions, shall we say. So I think it's very important that people listening don't think that Legislative Council is there just to check the words and make sure the comma's in the right place. It's a lot more to it than that, in my view. And I think Legislative Council also needs to focus not just on the detail, but also on the implementation of the island plan, which is going to be very important in the next few months.
Can I just come in? You use that phrase, fairly poorly thought out legislation coming through. Why? I mean, the MHK surely should produce almost finished products with just a little bit of titivating. How did this stuff come through?
Well, I think this was in a quite tense period of time with COVID, so there was a lot of time pressure. So things were being produced very, very quickly. And clearly there's some, it's not a question of titivating. I think, and there is perhaps a bit, again, I think it was Connor who said, the communication of the role of Legislative Council could be improved to explain actually what it does. And I think if you can bring examples of what Legislative Council did in the last 5 years, where it made some very significant contributions, including from Jane Poole Wilson and Kate Lord Brenning, who are two big shoes to fill, in my view. So I think it does fulfil an important role, but I think it needs to be explained, perhaps, and articulated a bit more effectively.
Mr. Shimmons, thank you. Let's go to Craig Brown, who's wanted to come in here.
Yeah, it was just a comment that you made to Mary Beth there, John, that struck a bit of a chord with me, where you were saying that could the nominations of two of the new members here by the existing MHKs potentially backfire on them if those MLCs move into the Keys in the future. I don't see how that could possibly be seen as backfiring if two people are strong enough to make it into the House of Keys in the future. That's got to be an improvement. And perhaps I've just answered my own question as to why I'm not standing as an MHK, because that naivety is perhaps not very helpful.
People will be saying, surely it was what used to happen is MHK served their time, built up their locker full of wisdom and moved to Legislative Council. Now it seems it's happening the other way around. Should that be? If you are elected to LegCo, should you be allowed to go back and try for a key seat?
There was a very similar question at the hustings on Friday, and why wouldn't you want the very best people in the House of Keys? And if they happen to come from the Legislative Council, that should be no different from coming from education, from business, from a retired professional, or from somebody who's starting out in life. You want the best people, regardless of where they are at present.
Oh, can I just move on now to these questions and ask first Darren Kelsey, are you going to try and make a name for yourself in the 15 months and perhaps then look to be a member of the Keys?
Absolutely not. Although I should qualify it by saying, of course, I'd want to make a name for myself because I'd be wanting to work hard and in 15 months' time be successful at the next MLC nominations and elections. So I don't see this as a...
You don't see yourself as a Keys member?
No, I don't. I did consider it quite some time ago. And interestingly, and Craig touched on it about naivety as well, I think when I looked into it properly, I don't think I've got the right character to be a Keys member. I'm not highly competitive. I'm more thoughtful but collaborative, but that doesn't mean to say I won't challenge. So I see my role as a member of LegCo to be someone who constructively challenges and critiques, and then works. I was going to swear then. No, very hard.
Probably better not.
Very hard to ensure we get good law.
Paul Crane is smiling ruefully there. Of course, you did put yourself forward for the Keys twice.
I stood for the Keys twice,
and garnered
yes.
quite a few votes.
The second time round, I had, as you said, over 1,000 votes. I'd actually had more votes than a quarter of the members elected to the Keys that year. I had more votes than the second
Were
candidate.
Were you bitter about that?
Not at all, no. On the night of the election, I was asked, did I think I would stand again? I was gutted, I was disappointed.
But this
I
said, is 2016. No.
Yeah. It's 2016, yes. Yeah. I was asked, would I stand again? I said I didn't think so. That if you push the door twice and it doesn't open, well, that's an end of it. But since then, I've been involved in the work with the population book. I've been called on by government departments to talk to them about aspects of climate change as well as population and various groups. So and I've been told by many people that my skills are a better set for Legislative Council than they would have been for
the Keys.
Shouldn't
that be the direction you went in the first place?
Possibly.
Put you towards the Keys? Ambition?
Not personal ambition, no. I've been involved in the Isle of Man a long time. I've been researching the population. I'm aware of many, many issues there that I'd love to see getting a higher profile. No, I'm in this for the good of the Isle of Man and would remain committed to working for the good of the Isle of Man, whether I'm in Legislative Council or not.
Let's just go to this popularly elected idea of the LegCo. Should it be popularly elected or should it be through the Keys, as will happen on Tuesday, all things being equal? We'll go to you, Connor, first.
Again, personally, from the outside looking in, I don't see any reason as to why LegCo cannot be publicly elected. What I would say within that is there would need to be a lot of education to the public around what they were actually voting for. Because as I highlighted before, I'm not convinced that people are 100% sure of the role of a Legislative Council member. So I'm not 100% sure that they would, across the island population, be aware of quite what they were voting for. But the concept of it being publicly elected, I don't necessarily at the moment see a problem with. I don't subscribe to the view that it would create friction within Tynwald if there was a larger vote share, because as I've touched upon before, the person would only be getting the mandate, if you like, for the role for which they applied, and they are two very differing mandates. One is a policy-driven mandate, and one is a scrutiny legislative mandate. So there's two real distinct things there. I mean, just something I've actually mulled over in my head over the last week or two, and I know it's quite radical, but would there perhaps be any scope out of the four members, perhaps maybe two to be indirectly elected, two to be publicly elected? It would perhaps answer the question,
forward if you were elected, of course.
Quite possibly, yeah. As I say, but as a Legislative Council member, my primary role would be to scrutinise. But I don't know, it's just something that, as I say, it's a popular question that comes up, and it's one for me. It's just an idea kind of that's come into my head. Obviously, it would throw potential logistic nightmares in the way if there was a case where
MLC was... We'll have to move on, because we've got quite a bit of ground to cover and only 4 minutes to do it in. Marybeth, should we be popularly electing our LegCo?
So the Liz Wayne report was pretty thorough about its understanding of this. And what their fear was is that what happens if you get a super duper popular MLC candidate who gets thousands and thousands of vote and their political prowess becomes higher than
an MHK. He thinks they would want to be king, do you think?
And perhaps. But they were trying to warn about maintaining the primacy of the House of Keys and being the legislative and governing body.
So LegCo could be too popular.
That was one of the recommendations. But the idea is that when the MHKs are voting for the MLCs, they need to be doing it acting in the interest of the public, and then they need to be seen to be acting in the interest of the public. And the recommendations listed in Lisvane give them some indications of how they can be seen to be acting in the interest of the public by making sure that there's not a revolving door policy make sure that there's no cronyism.
Can I just go back? Is that yes or no then to popular electing? So
the way that it's currently structured, I'd say no.
Right. Can we move Craig Brown?
I'll start with the answer. So no, I don't think it should be.
Right, next. Elected. I'm sorry, Manny Jokey. It's just quickly.
Very quickly. There is a danger that you're simply creating 8 new MHK positions if you go to public election. It's also very difficult for perhaps the public to be aware of some of the legislative challenges that the MHKs are aware of and therefore selecting. And when I voted in September for my MHK, I trusted him to make many decisions on my behalf, one of which was the election of the new MLCs. So I don't really see why we distinguish between selecting an MLC and doing many, many other potentially even more important things that we do trust our MHKs.
So it's a no, isn't it?
It's a no.
Dan Kelsey.
No, because 24 people have been elected by the public, and those 24 will choose two candidates on Tuesday.
Yes.
I agree with Diane and Craig. No from me. But I should say that actually the recruitment process to get us here is quite robust. It isn't a case that we just go, oh, this sounds like a good idea, we'll throw our CV in. You know, we've had to work quite hard, and I think it's quite brave from all of us to actually do this and to get to this point.
Let's just go to Bill Shimmins over there in Liverpool. Mr. Shimmins, yes or no?
Yes, it's clearly more democratic. There's lots of examples for revising chambers or second chambers in parliaments are directly elected. So I think we're all here to serve the people. Why would the people not elect the MLCs? So I appreciate people have different views on that, but for me, it's pretty straightforward. It's more democratic.
And Paul Crane.
Yeah, I would say no. I understand the arguments that members of the public might look at this and like it, but if you actually tried to imagine an election running where the candidates cannot put forward policies because they're not about policy, you know, you'd be producing a manifesto about how you're going to scrutinise, and that's limited. But also, I think the crucial thing is that the MLCs are able to take a longer-term view. They're not looking for an election coming up in 4 years, 3 years, 2 years. They can take a longer-term view. They're liberated from some of those pressures, and they're part of a relay rather than a marathon as they progress.
Thank you, one and all, for coming in on this gloriously sunny autumn day, for joining us. And I hope giving the people out there a chance to hear your voices, those who may not have spoken to you or heard you before, and be able to judge for themselves who they think the keys should be putting in the Legislative Council in these two seats for, may I remind you, for 15 months. That's the remainder of the term. So thanks indeed to Bill Shimmins over there in Liverpool, Paul Crane sitting next to me, Corelli Bentham, Dan Kelsey, Craig Brown, Mary Beth Cole and Connor Keenan, the seven candidates who on Tuesday will present themselves to the House of Keys and say, vote for me. That's it. I'm John Moss. A very good afternoon to you.